He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is John Katzimatidis. This is Katz at Night. And the WABC, this is a TriCast, 970 AM The Answer, WABC 770 and WLIR. And we have one great show for you today. We have no Republicans in here today. We have two common sense Democrats. I don't know what happened to the Republicans. They called in sick or something. We have Judge Richard Weinberg, Governor David Patterson, and my sidekick, Lydia Serrano. Lydia, who are we going to have on today during the show?
Before we get to our list, we have to say hello to Armand, right? He was your Uber driver, Albanian Uber driver, right? He's
in
a big
Naples,
fan of the show.
Florida. I was in Naples, Florida yesterday for 6 hours.
I know. You never stop working. And then Uncle Teddy in Astoria, we are wishing you well. Hopefully you are doing better today, right, Uncle Teddy?
Right.
And, okay, we have a great show today. This is a really good show. So we have Larry Kudlow. We have Officer Dion Joseph. He's from L.A. He worked 23 years on Skid Row. So he's going to talk to us about what's really going on in the streets and how New York City is on the precipice of becoming another Skid Row. We're going to have Dr. Peter Mikolos. He's got all the latest breaking news on the medical front. We'll also be speaking with Rita Cosby. But first on the line,
Dick Morris is going to call.
That's correct.
Too.
Dick Morris, he's going to be talking to us as well. And, you know, he's one that always kind of expresses his feelings. He's always a good conversation, Dick Morris. And then Miranda Devine of the New York Post. She's going to give us the latest on what's going on in the city, Hunter Biden, and more. But we wanted to talk amongst ourselves first, right?
What do we have?
Eric Adams. He had a great press conference this afternoon about getting the subway back the way it should be. I thought he was really powerful and strong. Did you hear that soundbite in the news there?
I was really, really disturbed that when he went up to Albany, Stuart Cousins, the state's senator, and Hasty told him to pound sand.
Right.
And the other problem is that I like the governor, and those two people have a supermajority, and they can tell the governor to pound sand too. But I think the governor and the mayor have a lot of power. I think the citizens of the city of New York will listen to them. And if they work as a team, that I think we can make progress. So what say you, Governor?
Well, the automatic rejection of what he was proposing, and the only thing that he had proposed so far was for the discretionary power to be given to judges in these situations. That judge is the last person that would stand between an individual going back on the streets if they have been found guilty of committing other similar offenses in the past or have violent conduct in their past. And the fact that they rejected it, they didn't say, well, you know what, we're going to take it up in conference, we're going to talk about it and that kind of thing. It stunned me. I'm really surprised.
Governor, John, Lydia, it's worse than that. You had Senator Stuart Cousins testifying before the body called the Democratic State Convention, and her moral testimony is the law is just fine the way it is. There's no problem. This is just one big Republican conspiracy to raise the climate.
That is such BS.
It's pure nonsense.
That is such BS.
I invite them to come into this city, go to Penn Station in the morning, go to Grand Central,
walk the streets. Without state troopers to guard.
That's exactly right. And to see what's going on, the fear that's rampant. 74% of the people in the city of New York, by the polls, saying crime is the number one issue. They have no moral authority not to consider what Governor Patterson just said. They should be talking about this.
Well, I wonder if Mayor Adams maybe was listening to the show last night, because Tony Carbonetti was telling him, listen, you have the bully pulpit. You have the world at your call right now.
This show is very influential. This number one show at 5 o'clock. A lot of people listen to it to find out what the heck is going on.
He's the nation's mayor. And what happens here in New York City could reverberate not only through the country, but throughout the world.
Everybody in this studio supports Eric Adams.
That's right.
And he's becoming, we will
stand side by side with him.
I want you guys to listen to what he said today regarding the subways. It kind of reminded me of Rudy Giuliani. Remember when he said the sidewalks are not for sleeping?
Say it.
We enforce these elements in these rules.
No more smoking. No more doing drugs. No more sleeping. No more doing barbecues on the subway system. No more just doing whatever you want. No, those days are over.
That's Lydia, it.
I'm going to miss the barbecues.
You're right, with the rice on the ground and everything like that. But good for him. Maybe he was listening to us because we were telling him, be angry, be forceful, and who cares? Forget about the eight. You know, he has to worry about the 8.5 million New Yorkers, not the 3,000 or so criminals and the regressives.
Well, go ahead, Governor.
He's coming to a place where I'll have to say I was in 2008 when I realized that because of the crash on Wall Street, 22.5% of New York's revenues came from Wall Street profits. So we went into an immediate dive. We were not nearly the worst state in terms of the way we ran our finances, but we were the hardest hit. And at a certain point, I had to realize that people who I had once called friends are not friends anymore. I had to think about the best interests of the state and couldn't spend the time with these commercials they put on about me. And this is going to happen to Adams. You're going to start hearing commercials about how the mayor's not doing what he promised. But Eric Adams really lives for himself. I don't mean he's selfish. I mean, he takes his cue from himself. He is not going to let anyone push him around. And some of the people who are, like I said yesterday, there's going to be an election in 2022. The Senate and Assembly.
We have to concentrate on that election.
And let me tell you something, John. The Senate and Assembly are going to lose a total of 20 seats. Just watch. And when that happens, Madame Cousins and Monsieur Hasty will be coming to the table.
They have to come to the table because people are leaving the city. The most productive, taxpaying, revenue drivers, employers, they're leaving. Businesses are closing. They're going to lose the. And by the way, we're going to run out of federal money.
Well, we have somebody on the line who knows New York City, and she's concerned it's going back to the bad old days. Miranda Devine, New York Post columnist. You have a great book, Laptop from Hell. And you also wrote a great column regarding Christina Yuna Lee's blood is on the hands of Democrats. That's not propaganda. It doesn't get more real than that.
Yes, hi. I mean, obviously, it's the problem that we've got in New York, which is escalating violent crime, homelessness, mental illness, drug abuse on the streets. And I mean, it's nice to hear that Eric Adams is actually talking tough and talking about really this sort of broken windows theory that was behind Rudy Giuliani's cleanup of New York, which is you have to clean up the signs of disorder to take back the streets, to make people feel safe to be out in their own neighborhoods, and that they're not sort of cowering in fear at the idea that there is some murderer out there ready to stalk them, as happened to poor Christina Lee, stalked when she came home from a night out, followed into her apartment building, followed up the flights of stairs to her apartment, and then this guy, you know, allegedly forced his way in, and she was found in a pool of blood in her bathtub, stabbed 40 times to death.
Miranda,
I mean, that is every woman's worst nightmare.
Miranda, it's Richard Weinberg, but you made a very important statement in your column. You said the blood is on the hands of the Democratic Party. Would you explain what you meant by that?
Well, it is purely and simply the dismantling of all the safety measures that Rudy Giuliani put in painstakingly, you know, 25 years ago. I mean, I remember living in New York in the 80s, pre-Giuliani, and it was, you know, had the same feel that we're getting today. Really dangerous Times Square, no-go zone. And what the Democrats have done, we had 8 years of de Blasio boasting, because he inherited the safest big city in the country, boasting about it while he was systematically unwinding it, pretending that he was actually diverting money into homeless services, giving almost $1 billion to his wife. God knows what happened to that money, but homelessness just got way times worse. And now we have the sort of inheritance of de Blasio that Adams has, which includes these insane ideas of putting high-risk homeless shelters in the city, in the most expensive parts of the city, right next to residential areas, wasting huge amounts of donors' money on pricey real estate which doesn't help anybody. What these people need, it's not shelter. They need mental health services. They need drug rehabilitation services. They do not need to have this laissez-faire legal environment where, felonies are being downgraded to misdemeanors and misdemeanors are being ignored, where the smell of pot is heavy in the streets. People pee on the streets with impunity. They defecate on the streets. Around Penn Station is the most disgusting, welcome to anybody getting off a train and wheeling a suitcase around the streets there, and they're just going to be lucky that the wheels don't get stuck up in human feces.
I want to be able to talk to Stuart Cousins from the state senate and to Hastie, because I interviewed Hastie before, and he was a very nice, common sense guy. I don't know what happened.
He spoke at a PAL lunch, John.
Yes, he did, and I liked the guy, and I just. At what point, three, I'm talking about violent crimes using guns and threatening people and knives. At what point? 3 indictments, 5 indictments, 7, 10, 12. At what point do you say this guy's not, you can't reform?
The guy that killed Christina Lee, he had just punched somebody in the face in a random attack and broke his nose. Can you imagine if that was you? And it's just a few days earlier. Had that crime been taken seriously, she would be alive today. And we keep seeing that over and over again, where these crimes have been decriminalized and then the person escalates and goes on to kill.
So at what point do we throw away the key?
I don't know. Judge Weinberg, talk to us about Kendra's Law. That's what Mayor Adams said during the press conference, that he wants to apply it more so now with the mentally ill and give judges more discretion in that respect.
Okay, the mental hygiene law said that if you're a threat to yourself or someone else after hearings in court, and then put them into a mental hospital for observation. They then changed it. They added a piece called Kendra's Law, which says that you can put somebody in for treatment, but it has to be outpatient treatment, and you can't mandate drugs. It's a weakness in Kendra's Law. So what Mayor Adams and Governor Hochul were talking about is they're going to try to sweep up the subways with social workers and nurses and cops to try to clean it up. But remember this, if you can't mandate somebody to take drug treatment, and if you can't mandate to have them on an inpatient basis rather than a random walk, you do a drop in the center and then you disappear, that's what you're going to have. You're going to have the dangerousness continue.
So, Your Honor,
need legislation on that, Governor.
Have they revised the 72 hours of observation that it would be where the hospital get a chance to see this person for a while before they decided whether or not to let him out?
The problem is you have competing laws. The Kendra's Law doesn't deal with an involuntary commitment.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's the problem. I'm all for involuntary commitments under the higher standard of the earlier mental hygiene law, which still exists. So you really have two different approaches. But if they're just going to rely on the Kendra's Law piece, it's not going to work. You need to sweep them up, get them into inpatient programs, put them in a facilities, as Miranda correctly points out, and you don't have these facilities in residential neighborhoods because then you destroy the residential neighborhoods.
Miranda Devine, where do we go from here at this point?
Well, look, John mentioned the Albany lawmakers, and Eric Adams tried. He went up there and he sat with them and he asked them if they could please just tinker slightly with the 2020 bail law reforms that have caused so much havoc, and they refused. All he wanted was for judges to be given the discretion to deem someone too dangerous to allow them out on the street. Now, that is a discretion that judges all over the country have. It is ridiculous that New York judges don't have it. It's not much to ask. I don't think it's anywhere near enough, and that's all that Adams asked for. And they sent him off with a flea in his ear. And Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who you mentioned, she then promptly went off to, boast about this on radio, in interviews. And she also went and gave a sort of a virtual meeting to some progressive activists up in Westchester who demand from their Democratic representatives complete fealty to their insane radical programs. And for some reason, you know, even if a Democrat is, you know, goes into office as a moderate, as a sensible person, they end up being somehow taken over by the radical left. And, you know, most Americans, most New Yorkers don't want those prescriptions.
Well, that's exactly what John Katzmatidis says. John, what do you say? You say the politicians have to make a decision. Do they want to make the regressives and the 3,000 people happy? Or?
Well, it's 8,500,000 people in New York City. Do they represent the 8,500,000 people, or do they represent the 3,000 criminals? Take their choice. And they got to make a decision. And I think everybody, every voter this November has to know their names and what decision those people made.
Right. I mean, at this point, if we just locked up another 2,000 or kept those 3,000 behind bars, what do you think would happen to
New
York?
It'd be a much safer city. Governor, what say you on that?
Well,
fix Rikers as well.
That's exactly right. That's right. Well, the problem right now is that there's an emboldened nature to how these legislators in Albany are feeling. And the only thing that will wake them up is if they look up and there are fewer of them next year.
That's the only way. We have to vote with our actions and call them out, right? We got to call them out. They need courage.
They have to know. The people in their district have to know that these people support the criminals, not the citizens.
And Judge Weinberg, you had a great line. It was pretty powerful about Andrea Stewart-Cousins, about being willfully blind.
She's willfully blind. You know, the old line, no one is as blind as one who will not see. And that's why I keep saying to these legislative leaders, come into the city, do a walk around, see what all of us who live in the city are seeing. People are fleeing. They're not investing. They're scared about having their kids go to school. They don't ride the subways. Business is down. And as I said earlier, you're going to be out of federal money. And Governor Pazzaluto.
You know what's interesting about this particular situation is those legislators who have been commenting on this, and Mayor Adams as well, he's not getting any strong pushback from progressives. He's really not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
because I think the progressive movement is a lot smaller than people think.
Yeah, but John, there are a whole lot of other things that they talk about all the time. What I'm saying is, I think even people with very progressive political points of view on a lot of issues know that there is an extreme problem with crime right now, and they are not jumping out. Adams made his statement today. I don't hear everybody jumping all over him because they know he's right. They just won't do anything about it.
And you've heard the woman from Harlem said, look, I live near Alvin Bragg, and I want to slap him if I see him because of the fact that Harlem is less safe than ever before.
Right. We asked one activist, a mother there, African-American, and I said, what is your biggest fear in life, Miranda? And you know what she said? That my 13-year-old son will get shot to death by somebody who looks just like him. That is my fear. I mean, how sad is that?
Well, it's the great tragedy of the whole BLM movement. And, you know, that was obviously, we now see that it was just a grifting operation to make lots of money for some people. And in the meantime, the activists succeeded in hobbling the police forces all around the country, and particularly the NYPD, which was defunded to the tune of $1 billion. For what? I mean, the NYPD wasn't responsible for these problems that had happened in, you know, Minnesota, and yet New Yorkers now suffered for it. And the people who are suffering more than anyone else is the black community. It is the black homicides which have gone up. I mean, we're all suffering, but most of the pain is being felt in those communities. And so Black Lives Matter doesn't care about those black lives.
Absolutely. And now we're also hearing that Amazon has, in their charity program, they have cut off Black Lives Matter because they can't even account.
It's about time. How dumb were they?
How dumb, because they can't say where
Rita
all the
Cosby,
money went.
Rita Cosby is going to be on later on. And she's going to talk about that, because a big part of our show tonight is about that.
Absolutely. Now, we also got more to talk about. Thank you so much, Miranda Devine. We have to go to a hard break. We are going to speak with Larry Kudlow. President Biden just spoke a short time ago. Are we going to war or what? I don't know.
Biden wants to go to war, I think, but I don't want to go to war.
Nobody wants war. We'll be right back.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Catsimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC. Breaking news, WABC.
And that breaking news coming right out of Washington, D.C. The president spoke a short time ago. Let's listen to that real quick.
We have reason to believe the Russian forces are planning to and intend to attack Ukraine in the coming week, in the coming days.
With us today is Larry Kudlow. And Larry, we spoke about this every week for the last 4 or 5 weeks. What do you think?
The last 4 or 5 months. I mean, the president keeps forecasting, keeps predicting that Russia is going to invade. Remember, they were going to invade Wednesday, and they didn't. And then he said they're going to invade in the next couple days. And then he said it again today. Why he's making these predictions is utterly beyond me.
I am scared, Larry. I am scared that he wants war. And, you know, and we've talked about that. Me and you have talked about that a lot.
Well, look, he is allowing Putin to control this. And that really bothers me. That runs contrary to American interests. And obviously, Biden is not an America first guy. I mean, look, John, Biden should have gotten up. I mean, he should have done this months ago. But today, he was, by the way, 50 minutes late for this press conference on a Friday afternoon.
So Putin delayed his move for 50 minutes at least.
They had a problem up with the Adderall.
Maybe it was Trump's fault. Maybe it was Trump's fault that he was 50 minutes late.
Yeah, I know. It's always Trump's fault. But look, if you want to be strong about this, what you do is you set a deadline. You say to Putin, and not in one of these phone calls. You do it in a proper diplomatic demarche in writing. You have a March 1st deadline. If your troops do not return to their proper barracks, then we will, as of March 1st, impose strict across-the-board banking and energy sanctions, just like that.
I'm not sure, Larry, we have the right to tell him what to do on his own territory.
Well, look, you can't allow him to invade sovereign states. You can't allow him to dictate who can and cannot go into the Western alliance. I mean, I don't want to see any American troops involved here whatsoever. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not in favor of war. However, in the world of international diplomacy, the Chinese are watching, North Koreans are watching, the Iranians are watching. This all comes in the aftermath of the catastrophic withdrawal of Afghanistan. America looks like a weak sister. Biden is a weak president. And Putin is taking advantage of that. By the way, he's making moves all over Eastern Europe right now, in Belarus, in Georgia, in Moldova. I mean, he's just gotten free rein. No, we can't interpose. I don't want a military. But you've got to say to him, he cannot dictate to the West. And that's why, and you, by the way, you can't just go into these countries and take them over. So that's what, to me, is at stake here. It's a matter of American interest. Look, you know, we let Putin do this scot-free, John. Then China will figure after the Olympics, why can't they take over Taiwan? Okay?
Well, they took over Hong Kong.
Right. Larry, this is David Patterson. My question
to
you.
Let me just finish the point. Sure. The other point is, at the same time this is happening, the Biden people are desperately trying to negotiate a new deal with the rogue state of Iran, which lies, cheats, steals, and sponsors terrorism throughout the Middle East, mostly aimed at Israel. Okay? So these other countries are watching how we handle this. And I'm suggesting to you that the lack of deadlines, the lack of clarity, the lack of sanctions has done damage here. Now, how this plays out, I have no idea. Interestingly, John, the markets are shrugging this off. There's no big move in the markets. There's
And Putin is disappointed that he hasn't gotten the price of oil up to 100, 110 yet.
Hmm.
Yes, well, I'd be careful on that because, first of all, oil has gone up through 90. So you've had a rally, and I think the rally is primarily regarding Ukraine. If Russia, I mean, this is a different point. If Russia decided to impose sanctions on itself, in other words, if Russia says we're not going to put any natural gas out into Europe, all right, that'll drive all energy prices sky high. That would drive the price of oil to $150 and would have grave economic consequences for the United States. And, of course, remember, all of that is coming at a point when Biden is waging a jihad against fossil fuels. I mean, look, this week alone, the SEC is now imposing climate regulations on companies. FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is now imposing climate change and environmental regulations on pipelines. FERC is going to make it so you can't build a new pipeline ever again. The SEC is doing it, and they're trying to get this woman, Sarah Bloom Raskin, onto the Federal Reserve Board as the head of bank supervision. And she herself has said many times in public that she wants to allocate bank capital and bank loans away from fossil fuel companies. So while the world needs more oil and the world needs more natural gas, literally to survive, Biden is doing everything he can through the regulatory arm in Washington to stop it. Now, to me, that is incredibly stupid. And this, of course, comes in the wake, closing down the XL pipeline, but allowing the Nord Stream 2 to reopen. So I don't understand this. I'm baffled by it. It's very bad policy. It's a sign of weakness. But how it plays out, I have no clue.
Well, I'll give you another scenario. Biden, as we talked about last week, is making $1 billion a day, $365 billion a year, which takes care – oil is taking care of his entire budget for the whole country.
Oh, that's Putin.
I mean, oh, yes, I mean Putin. Yeah. I apologize. And Biden you know, we're hurting our country, and Biden is imposing regulations, as we talked about, on General Motors and imposing regulations on Ford to make more electric cars. Now, we're driving around Mercedes. We're driving around Toyotas after World War II. Maybe we'll be driving around Russian cars that still be making gasoline cars in the future.
It's quite possible. You know, only if Nancy Pelosi's got a stock in it.
I mean, in all seriousness, none of this is in American interest. It's a shame, really a tragedy, that Biden is using all of this climate risk to regulate. I mean, he's using all the federal agencies, or he's trying to, the Federal Reserve, the SEC, FERC. This is just terrible policy. We have
Larry,
the best energy industry in the world.
Biden is not smart enough. Biden is not smart enough to orchestrate this. Somebody behind the scenes is orchestrating this whole thing.
Well, whoever's doing it, they're doing it, okay? Biden is going along with it. He's not objecting to it. I mean, maybe they prop him up and, you know, he's got a pair of sunglasses on. We all think he's still alive. I can't deal with that.
I saw that movie.
Weekend at Bernie's.
Whoever's pulling the string.
I don't know who to laugh or cry, right?
It's you know, it's very bad. And I might add also, you know, look, you had a very bad inflation, another bad inflation number this week. Import prices were up 11% year on year. That follows wholesale prices were up 10% year on year. And consumer prices last week were up 7.5%. My point is the momentum shows clearly that inflation is on the rise. And whatever the Federal Reserve decides to do, at a certain point in time, the increase in inflation, which taxes middle and lower income people very badly, they lose real incomes. This is to the detriment of the American economy. And so this is another tremendous mistake on Biden. They still want to spend more money. I mean, can you imagine this week they're now putting up, let's have another $30 billion for COVID. Let me just tell you this. They put up about $6 trillion in emergency spending. Of that sum, $800 billion has not ever even been used. And they're coming back now with $30 billion more for COVID, $350 billion more for a stupid so-called China Competes Bill, which is all about corporate welfare and picking winners and losers and industrial policy. In other words, the spending proposals continue, and that is the single biggest contributor to inflation. And even Democrat economists are coming out and saying, in fact, one Democrat economist said this week that, you know, a lot of the supply chain problems come from the simple fact that we've had overstimulation of consumer demand, and that no time could we meet that demand. There's been so much excessive stimulus in the economy, and Biden will not deal with that either. So we will see how this plays out. All I can say is I just don't see anything good on the horizon except for this. Biden's polls continue to plunge. So I'm convinced that the good sense of the American people, to use your phrase, John, the good common sense of the American people are rejecting big government socialism. The cavalry is on the way. Biden's program is being stymied, and there's going to be a clean GOP sweep come November. Sorry, Governor Patterson.
Governor, did you want to say something before?
Larry, I was just going back to the issue about the potential of war in that area, and just ask you, isn't it possible that Biden could have started to begin the sanctions even before a so-called war has started? In other words, wouldn't that have been another way that he could have?
Yeah, but we're creating the problem then.
He should have put his foot down 4 or 5 months ago, David. You're exactly right. He should have put a marker in the sand. He should have put a timeline. And as soon as those 150,000 troops were moved to the Ukraine border, he should have put his foot down. And listen, David, he never should have ended the sanctions on Nord Stream 2. He never should have done that.
How about giving Iran back $26 billion?
Or how about not leaving people stranded in Afghanistan and make us look so feckless?
Thank you. No, Lydia, all these things are correct. And Biden sits idly by. So, Governor Patterson, I happen to agree with you. He should have been much more forceful about this, and he probably wouldn't be in. Listen, he has permitted Putin to be in the driver's seat, and that is not the position you want the United States to
have. And he wouldn't have looked as weak as he does now if he had done that. And now, the only way he could even look halfway strong is if there is a war, and that's not, as a president, something that – that's not a position you want to put yourself in.
That's correct. By the way, it's very hard to figure this out. It's not about Americans or American troops. Remember, Ukraine is surrounded by four NATO countries, right, including Poland, which is a very important country, a very large country. America's one of its best allies. There's no telling with troops coming in from Belarus, there's no, which is just a stone's throw from Kiev. There's no telling whether this would turn into a conflagration around Ukraine. There's no telling and no predicting. That's why this idea of, they're going to invade on Wednesday, or they're going to invade on Friday, or
Thursday,
Monday.
After 12.
After 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
They're waiting for the Olympics to be over.
We got to go take a hard break. Let's take a hard break. Larry Kudlow, thank you so much for everything you do for our country. God bless you.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
So coming back, we're going to talk about, is New York City on the brink of becoming another Skid Row?
Dick Morris is calling in, too.
Absolutely. We'll be.
Okay, let's hold on, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
John Katz and the TV's.
Welcome back.
Well, we got Dick Morris with us right now, and I'd really like to see what the heck is going on. Dick, Joe Biden had just had a press conference about a half hour ago, and he says that he's mad as hell at Putin. What say you?
Well, he's posturing, and he's trying to get well. This reminds me a little bit, John, of The Wizard of Oz. where all of the characters are trying to remedy their defects. Joe Biden is the cowardly lion, and he's also the scarecrow with no brain. And the cowardly lion's trying to bolster up courage, and the scarecrow with no brain is trying to act smart. And at the same time, Putin is the tin man without a heart. He's trying to show that he's compassionate and won't start a war.
Putin is making
Putin is
making $1 billion a day, and he's like he'd like to have the price of oil up another $10 a barrel.
So this is Biden right here.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could.
Wow, how did you have that keyed up?
I had it ready. I had it ready. I mean, when you're talking about Biden, you got to talk about somebody needing a brain.
Yeah, you've been following my stuff.
Yes, I listen to you every weekend. I do. I really, your show is fantastic.
Every Sunday between 12 and 1.
Yes.
And let me tell you something. I really enjoy your show, Dick.
You have such insightful analysis. It really is. No, I'm being serious. It really is incredible. So I highly recommend your show for everybody to listen to.
Thank you. Well, I enjoy it so much. It's so great. So I think right now we're just going through a period of posturing where everybody's trying to get well with their domestic constituency. Biden wants to show he's strong and tough, and Putin wants to show that he's reasonable and not crazy. And Macron, for good measure, has an election coming up in April. So he's trying to show that France is leading Europe away from war. And now that Germany's on the sidelines on this one. And but, of course, the real issue is, what does Putin do? Those are not 150,000 imaginary toy soldiers sitting there on the border. I think it's very likely that he will invade. And all of a sudden, this is going to get very real. Very quickly.
What year were you wrong when Roger Ailes got mad at you?
Roger Ailes got what?
Got mad at you.
No.
What year was that?
Well, yeah, I was
2013 was it? When was it?
We should. Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe I'm wrong with my predictions that nothing's going to happen.
This is what we were talking about, Dick Morris. I think he is going to use some sort of excuse, Putin, that he's going to take a part of Ukraine, but he's going to use some sort of technicality and say that it was their property or their territory to begin with anyway. So he's just taking back what belonged to him in the first place. So that's what I think he's going to do.
I don't think Putin wants to do anything to affect the $1 billion a day he's taking in.
Well, I think he's taking it in because of a crisis.
Yes.
Not because of any...
Well,
you know,
so the longer the crisis goes, the more money he makes.
If it's not, the oil goes up, his income goes up.
If it's not $1 billion a day, it'll be $900 million.
But let's go back to what you said.
Go ahead.
The reason Ukraine is one-third Russian is that Stalin had a policy of forcing Russians to move to the Ukraine so that they could colonize it. It's kind of like what we accuse Mexicans of doing in the U.S., colonizing through immigration. Well, we did it actually in Texas at the beginning. And so what he's doing now is he's taking the Russian populations in each of these former Soviet republics. And he's saying they're our responsibility, they're our natives. And they were planted throughout these countries to give Russia a stake in these countries. And now he's trying to use that. The important thing to bear in mind is that there's an easy deal that can be cut here, a very simple deal. And it's obvious. Ukraine withdraws its application to NATO. NATO extends security guarantees to a non-member state, Ukraine, which they've often done. The U.S. pledges not to put missiles or troops in Ukraine, just keeps them in Poland 10 miles away. And Putin accomplishes terrifying the Ukrainian people with these threats and the massing of troops so that they never opt for an anti-Russian president again. They basically watch their step not to offend Russia for the rest of maybe the century. Very similar to what happened to Finland or to Sweden, where they got so scared of Russia that they basically neutered their foreign policy. And Ukraine becomes, in effect, a satellite, self-governing, free, but don't screw with Russia. And I think he's already really accomplished that.
Well, Dick Morris, I might be calling you on Sunday morning to see if there's any updates. Well, we got to take a hard break. Thank you, and let's come back. And
okay.
I
and thank you for queuing up the song. That was terrific.
I love music. Let's go. Thank you, Dick Morris.
And now we have another great guest on the line. We have Officer Dion Joseph from the LAPD. You've been a cop for 25 years, 23 of them on Skid Row, officer. And we're talking about what's going on here in New York City. If you take a look at Penn Station, it's like The Walking Dead.
Wow, that's horrible. Thank you for having me on the show. This is a thing that is spreading across the country. I said in 2007 that Skid Row goes, so does the rest of the county. I didn't realize it was going to be the rest of the country. So we're just looking at horrible policy, and I'm not left or right, so I'm not here knocking anyone's ideology or political worldview. I'm kind of a center guy, but we have to be honest that it is progressive policies that are kind of pushing many cities to the edge, to the point of a horrible low quality of life. And it's not going to get better anytime soon until those leaders are changed.
And Officer Joseph, you're an African-American yourself. To hear about Black Lives Matter and all these other regressives, we don't call them progressives here. We call them regressives, right? We don't call them progressives.
Yeah,
they're
taking us backwards, not frontwards.
So the very policies they claim that are helping the inner city and the black communities seem to be hurting the most as a result.
Well, unfortunately, you know, the whole kind of movement was kind of founded on a faulty premise. If we remember 2014, the whole thing was hands up, don't shoot. Mike Brown was holding his hands up, begging for his life, and this big, mean white cop shoots him. That was a narrative that was adopted, held, and spread through propaganda. And unfortunately, even the media was a part of it, which is really sad when journalistic integrity dies and they start espousing the same things. I mean, literally, this video of anchors holding their hands up, you know, during commercial breaks, hands up, don't shoot. And then when the facts came out, none of that happened. You know, you had 40 witnesses. Most of them were African-American who said the complete opposite. And, but unfortunately, black life for some groups is only as valuable as the race or the profession of the person that kills them. Because what frustrates me as a police officer and a black man is in 1 year, 7,000 precious black lives are murdered through random street violence, gang violence, senseless killings. You're talking about small children. You're talking about somebody's grandfather walking down the street, somebody's mother, somebody's father, senselessly their life taken away.
He's 100% right. Senseless killings. Senseless. And these people are harming. I grew up in Harlem, sir. And they're harming the people in the inner city more so than anybody else.
Where's Black Lives Matter for the kid that gets shot in the face that happened in the Bronx not too long ago?
And what are they doing with all the money that they got from these corporate donations to help the communities?
Officer Joseph, how do you combat this false narrative that is being perpetuated all across the country?
Well, what's going to happen is we're going to have to open our hearts and minds to another side of the conversation, and that is the law enforcement perspective. You know, like I said, we have to get cops back on college campuses, talking to people, having real conversations that aren't one-sided. You know, for years, I used to give Skid Row tours to about 3,500 college students who would come down to Skid Row just to see me because they heard there was this big, mean officer who was rousting the homeless. So they would challenge me, and they would come down, and their college professors would bring them to me. And in 2 hours, I was able to erase two semesters of indoctrination by not just orally giving them a presentation of truth, but actually walking them in the streets of Skid Row and having them see the relationship I had with the people. And the truth was that people didn't hate the police. There was no animus between the homeless population and the police. There was just an advocacy group there, similar to the ones that we're dealing with now, who prey on people's emotions and their lack of knowledge, direct knowledge of a situation, and they lie to the public about certain situations, and they end up embellishing and causing so much divisiveness. But when they actually saw it for themselves, that what I was telling them matched what they saw, all of a sudden their minds completely changed. So it's going to take a lot of that. It's going to take us holding our civic leaders accountable and saying, hey, stop embracing this propaganda. Clearly, this thing is not working out of the gate. I don't care if they're on the left side or the right side. Stop adopting this whole idea that the whole system today is systemically racist. Look, I don't believe the system is systemically racist. I believe that there are people within the system, like in any profession, that disappoint us all, right? No matter what, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, military, firefighter, look, we all have a negative exception in each of those professions. I mean, I'll put it to you like this. In 1 year, law enforcement officers killed, 1,000 people? That's 800,000 men and women who get up every day, whether they're white, black, gay, straight, Christian, Jew. They go out there to protect the public. They don't kill 800,000 people a day. They killed 1,000. Okay, yeah. Doctors in 1 year killed 450,000 people.
And
okay?
Sorry, we have to go to a hard break. We went over time. We'd like to call you back again next week to continue this conversation if you're available next week.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for telling the truth. And let's take that hard break.
It's a common sense recap of the big stories. It's Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night show. On the line for us right now is the host of the number one show at 10 o'clock, the Rita Cosby Show. Hi, Rita. You got a great show coming up tonight. Tell us all about it.
Thanks so much, Lydia. We are going to be blowing the lid on Black Lives Matter. Literally hundreds of millions of dollars. Where did they go? You definitely have to tune in tonight about that. And we're also going to be talking about how they have been bailing out people, including a case in Kentucky where it was an accused attempted murderer. What are they doing bailing out people who have been convicted of heinous crimes?
Is that murderer ever going to show up?
That's the question. By the way, John, he got out.
He tried to kill a mayoral candidate.
Yeah, he shot at him, and they BLM bailed him out, an attempted murderer.
After 48 hours, guys, that he was behind bars. That's it. 48 hours. Why is he walking the street? You hit it exactly. But
Rita,
also,
here's what you
where
do.
Are all the funds going?
You got to get an investigative report and find out all the legitimate companies that are donating it, and let's expose them.
Absolutely. And a lot of people, by the way, thought, okay, I'm, for Black Lives. We want to help this. There were people who genuinely thought they were contributing to racial, unity. And now they're finding out that people are using it on vacations, using it on bailing out killers.
Beverly Hills homes.
Yes. And Beverly Hills homes. And also, by the way, Salt Lake City, some big places. The other thing, too, guys, we're also going to have on tonight General Jack Keane. You definitely want to tune into that. Of course, great Fox News military analyst about the big news that Biden saying that Putin has decided to invade Ukraine. I'm going to ask him if we can trust the intelligence, because, of course, this administration has not been good. Yeah, exactly. I knew you'd get that, Lydia. I knew it.
I vote no. Rita, I vote no.
You know what, Judge? I agree with you. And we'll ask the vice chairman what he thinks, the former vice chairman of the U.S. Army, what his take is. And also, we're going to be talking about Tyrant Trudeau, because they are cracking down on the truckers in Canada. It's outrageous, guys. They're taking kids away. They're taking animals away. They are, impounding their trucks. It is outrageous.
Rita, why do you think President Biden keeps making these bold predictions? First, they were supposed to go to war on Wednesday, Russia invading Ukraine. Now he's saying the next couple of days. Then first he said the Olympics. I mean,
he got the Wednesdays wrong. Maybe it's next Wednesday.
Yeah, he meant Wednesday a year from now, right?
But why is he even making these projections? What is
he
happening?
He needs a war.
Yeah, I agree
Joe
with
Biden
John.
Needs
I think
a war.
He wants to look tough.
I would say you're taking off the front pages, except you don't have an honest press to put it on the front pages.
Well, that's why we're here.
He wants to take inflation off the front page. He wants to take the price of gasoline off the front page, the price of food off the front page. He needs a war. And I'm saying to him, Mr. Biden, America does not need a war.
Where do you see on the front page the border crisis, the Durham filing about Hillary Clinton spying on the Trump campaign while at Trump Tower, as well as the White House? Where are you hearing about the drug crisis? Where are you hearing about bail reform? Where are you hearing about any Hunter Biden laptop? You don't hear it really anywhere, but you can hear it right here on WABC Radio. Thank you so much, Rita Cosby. 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. till midnight, right? Great show.
I'll be listening.
Thank you, everyone.
And John, you have a great show on Sunday.
On Sunday, we have a great show, too. We have a lot of interesting people.
Senator Thune, we are going to have Dick Morris. You're going to have Dr. Peter Mikolas, which we didn't have time for today, but he'll be on with you Sunday morning. And I'm sure, hopefully, we won't be at war at that point.
I'd hope so. I want to thank Governor David Patterson. Governor, thank you.
Thank you, John.
And Judge Richard Weinberg.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Lydia, my sidekick.
And Cats Roundtable, 10 a.m.
Did you say hello to my driver in Naples, Florida yet?
Yes, I did. Armand Shuyupi, I think I said. He's Albanian, right?
And Uncle Teddy?
Uncle Teddy in Astoria. He's doing good.
He's doing good. He's a good guy.
Theodore.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. God bless.